of Monday, December 9th, 2013. Whoa, already missed Christmas. 6:30 p.m. And I'd like it if we could start. Let's start with a flag salute. And I've asked Councilmember Nichols to do it because we're not that far off of the 7th of December. You're a Marine.
Here.
Here.
Here. So now we're going to go into public communications, and I will give folks another opportunity to speak later tonight if there are questions or concerns or things you want to share with us. This public communications, again, is a little bit different because tonight's a workshop. It's a little bit less formal. I think we'll still stick with the 3 minutes. If you need more time, I'll be open-minded about that. But tonight you can speak on anything that is not on the agenda. So if you came with something that you wanted to share with us, please do. And you can also speak on anything that is on the agenda for this particular public comment. So I'm going to open public comment, and I'd be grateful if you could tell us your name and the city you reside in. Is there anybody who wanted to come forward? Nobody wants to say anything. Okay, all righty. We'll close public comment, and I'll give you another opportunity later in case you have questions or comments. So the topic of our workshop tonight is local street repair. It's actually our local street repair program, and our city manager, Peralt, and our public works director, city engineer, Ray, are going to present tonight.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, I'll go ahead and do a introduction, if you will. First of all, as you already know, this is a workshop, and the information that you'll be receiving tonight will deal with both the current conditions of the streets, a review of the current options that we're using to repair the streets currently, the outlook as to what will be available to repair streets in the future, and what your options are. The second part of the workshop will be actually taking a look at what the mechanisms are that are available to you for financing long-term options should you wish to go in that direction. The other point I'd like to make is, yes, this is an informational workshop, so you won't be making any decisions tonight. That's not the purpose of the meeting. The purpose of the meeting is for us as staff to share with you our suggestions and recommendations, and for you to discuss the information that's presented and obviously ask questions so that hopefully you have a good understanding of today. Everyone knows that Grover Beach has had a very, very hard time in trying to make much progress with street maintenance or rehabilitation. Well, there is a good reason for that, and part of that reason, you actually have to go all the way back to when the town was laid out in the late 1800s by D.W. Grover. So we all know we have these wonderful wide streets. I'm not actually sure why he designated them so wide. Maybe it was so that horse and buggy could amply turn, but the wonderful wide streets, I tend to think his image for the community when he was laying it out was as a resort community, and where especially on those east and west streets you could take the sweeping look right down to the Pacific Ocean, and that probably had something to do with it. Anyway, as a result, we ended up with 44 lineal miles of streets. That's a lot of streets for a small town of 2.25 square miles. In addition to that, I'm sure Mr. Ray will cover this more in detail, the amount of asphalt is 9.36 million square feet. And believe it or not, that is a lot of asphalt. Subsequently, the amount of revenue that's been available to repair and maintain those streets has always been fairly limited. The city of Grover Beach, as we all know from our budget sessions, is largely dependent on residential property tax. We have the smallest general fund of any city within the county, yet we have the densest population that we have to provide per square mile that we have to provide services for. So consequently, given the fact that you've had 44 lineal miles of streets and very, from the very beginning, very limited income resources, it has been nearly an impossible task for any council or administration to devise a plan that's ultimately been successful. That's not to say that there haven't been so that we could get more done. Some of that meant that we were only concentrating on our arterials because that was the requirement of the grant source. Things have not improved lately. You know, a couple of things I want to point out. The city lost the redevelopment agency. It's been about a year and a half, 2 years now. And at that time, the redevelopment agency was producing between $800,000 and $1 million per year. A portion of that was legitimately spent on streets within the redevelopment project area. Obviously, with the elimination of redevelopment by the state, we're no longer able to do that. Back in 2006, the citizens supported the then council and city administration when they passed the half-cent sales tax measure. The half-cent sales tax measure allowed us to focus more on streets for a limited period of time. There was a period of time between 2006, 2007, 2008. We came close, a lot closer to meeting an $800,000 expenditure on the streets. We haven't been able to do that since that time, largely because of the recession and the dip in the property tax. Those dollars were largely needed. A decision had to be made between basic services and the streets. And by basic services, I'm talking about police, fire, public works, those kinds of things. We had to take cuts even with that. We used a great portion of that half-cent sales tax. So we've had, even with the assistance of that ballot measure, we've had a very difficult time in coming up with any more dollars we could really designate for the streets. And the outlook, as Greg will point out, isn't improving to the point where we're going to be able to invest any substantial amount in the streets. So the reality is the council will have decisions that are available to you. Then, of course, feel free to ask questions as we go along the way. At the end of his presentation, we'll pause for a question period. And then I'm going to ask Albert Pache to address some of the financing options that might be available to you. Mr. Pache has worked with the city as a financial advisor in the past and is here gratis to help you understand what those mechanisms are. And then we have former Public Works Director Jim Gehring, who is also with us and in the audience tonight and may be able to answer some of the questions, especially those that deal with some of the history of our streets and how they were constructed, et cetera. So with that, unless there are any specific questions of me, I'd like to ask the Public Works Director to pick it up from here.
Any questions of the City Manager? Okay. Take it away, Mr. Ray.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Peralt, and good evening, Honorable Council and Mayor. I'm going to be building on some of the things that the City Manager has alluded to in terms of the budget and some of the realities of street repair in the city. And so my presentation is meant to be fairly blunt and to the point, which is kind of, I guess, my style. But hopefully what you'll come out of is a basic understanding of the problem and the challenges that we face. So with that, presentation, or my presentation, is Street Repair Short and Long-Term Strategies. So first, starting with a little bit of background, I think it's pretty obvious to anyone that despite past efforts, the streets are in pretty poor condition. On a pavement condition scale of 0 to 100, with 100 being basically a new street, you know, most of the streets in the city rank below 50. The city has targeted an average annual budget over the last 10 years at about $700,000 and has actually done pretty well. The average yearly expenditures over the last 10 years have consisted of about $350,000 per year of local funds. That's an average, again, over the last 10 years. And as City Manager Peralt mentioned, you know, that's primarily property tax and sales tax. We also received some gas tax revenue, and in addition, as I mentioned earlier, some grant funds, and those have been used in part to pay for some local street repair, but not really extensively. The majority of major connecting streets have been repaired with grant funds, and I mentioned here that we've used local funds to leverage some of those grant funds. Most state and federal grants, though, unfortunately, are really for safety and what we call non-motorized improvements. You know, these funds have been primarily transportation enhancement funds. We receive some ARRA funds to do enhancements. They're not specifically targeted, nor are you really necessarily allowed to use some of these grant funds for street repair, for rehab. But the city has leveraged these funds for street repairs where possible. And I'd like to give an example because I think that the previous councils and people on staff before me really need to be applauded for some creativity in using grant funds. And looking at just what kind of things, how do we do that? Well, the most recent project on West Grand between 8th and 11th Street. You hear a lot of discussion about why are we doing that project versus repairing streets. Well, that was a grant-funded project with transportation enhancement funds. Again, those funds are targeted toward safety improvements, non-motorized type improvements, slowing down traffic, things like decorative landscaping and colored concrete and sidewalk enhancements. Those monies are not available for street rehabilitation. So the city applied for a $532,000 federal grant, which was then coupled with $300,000 in additional state highway account funding from via SLOCOG for a total of about an $832,000 grant-funded project. That project required local matching funds in order to get the grant. And so the city provided roughly $274,000 in local matching funds. So the city was able to take local matching funds to get the grant, but then in the construction of the project, the city was able to use the local matching funds during the project, principally for street repairs associated with the project. So the beauty is we take some local funding, we get grant funding that furthers other goals and objectives the city has. But in 2010, West Grand Avenue, the ARRA-funded project between 2nd and 4th, South 4th Street, again, between Seabright and West Grand in 2009, and so on. There's a number of projects here. I'm not sure how well you can see those. The print's kind of small. But anyway, again, the city has been actively pursuing street repair projects. So the rest of my discussion, again, I mentioned, you know, pretty much cold, hard facts. I want to get down to the meat and bones of the problem. So what is the cost to repair streets? What is our current short-term strategy? What is the short-term outlook based on existing funding levels and existing strategy? And what are some potentials for a long-term strategy? So first, let's look at the cost to repair streets. Well, as most people are aware, street repair is very expensive. And unfortunately, the city has a lot of pavement. As City Manager Peralt mentioned, there's 9.4 roughly million square feet of asphalt. That's a lot of asphalt. Community Development Director Buckingham, who I believe is in the audience, was doing some quick math the other day and came up with that's approximately 15% of the city is paved. 15% of the total area in the city is pavement. Anyway, that's a ton of pavement. Full replacement cost is approximately $10 per square foot. So you're looking at, if you replaced all the pavement, $90 million. That's a big chunk of money. So looking at some pavement management concepts and kind of how would the system work if we started brand new? So if we had all new streets and just started brand new today, about $600,000 per year would be enough to maintain only our major connecting streets. And I have a couple slides ahead, I'll show you what those streets are and what that means. But $600,000 per year, which is just a little bit less than our targeted funding source or funding for the last 10 years on average, would just be enough to maintain the major connecting streets. Again, if we started with all new streets today, it would cost approximately $1.6 million per year to keep up with all the streets. Well, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. I mean, if we're funding roughly $700,000 a year now, and if we can continue to get grant funds, and if the economy improves, and other efforts to improve income to the city continue ahead, you know, we could get close to this. But $1,000 per year, but that includes grants. We've been pothole patching with cold mix. We've been contracting out small removal and replacement projects on really severely deteriorated areas. And we've contracted out really fairly small annual street rehab projects and primarily on the major connecting streets. This is the council adopted list of major connecting streets. And our short-term strategy is to really focus the majority of our funds on these 13 streets. I mentioned at the bottom of the slide here, these 13 streets form a grid work across the city that consists of 4 streets north and south and 9 streets that run east and west. So if all these streets were in fairly decent condition, at least you'd have a network of streets in good condition that would get you to and from the highway, across town, and to and from other local streets within that network of streets. So looking at the current condition of streets, the current funding level, the short-term strategy, what are some other things that we could consider to improve the condition without any other changes? And we might consider the purchase of a patch truck, which could do permanent repairs versus filling potholes with cold mix. We've been looking into that a little bit, and there's some other agencies have provided information to the city to suggest that it might be a reasonable idea worth considering. We've talked about maybe identifying a few intersections or severely deteriorated areas for removal and replacement each year, so that we're trying to catch kind of the worst small areas if we can. And one idea is to try to increase private participation. And believe it or not, we've had a little bit of private participation in street repair. Miners Hardware paved an area around miners using principally their own funds. So we could have some volunteer funding. It's possible. We could also modify the development requirements. As you are probably aware, right now a new single-family residence is required to construct curb, gutter, sidewalk, and to do a street conform to within 11 feet of the edge of the pavement. The city also has a portion of that the city funds, though, with that. If we decided to change that requirement and maybe require each development to do more paving, annual funding levels just cannot overcome the rate of deterioration. The streets are in poor condition, and the rate of deterioration is basically outpacing our funding. Spot repairs are becoming ineffective as pavement conditions worsen, and we're finding less and less solid pavement to repair to. And in my opinion, many of the streets in the city have reached the end of their expected lifespan anyway, so you know, we're just cobbling them together, even though they're pretty much done. So again, you know, what is the outlook? Well, I took an approach of sort of a, you know, so what happens if we continue current annual funding, apply for grants when available, and really do nothing else? Well, we know the current annual funding is not enough. We've been told by the COG, SLOCOG, that's the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, that the grant outlook is not good. We've been told not to expect much money, if any, for street rehab within the cities. And if we do receive any at all, it would be for really the major streets that serve more cities than just ours, and that would be Oak Park, 4th Street, and West Grand Avenue. I think we can expect the condition of all the streets to continue to decline, so probably not going to get better. And I think we could probably maintain a grid of 5 or 6 of those major connecting streets that I showed on the earlier slide in acceptable condition. And that's really the outlook. And, of course, we'd continue to spot, patch, and repair large potholes as we can. So, you know, that brings up the question, well, you know, clearly the city is working and the council, one of their principal goals is economic development. And, of course, the economy does seem to be improving somewhat. So, you know, is that the answer? Well, I know we can expect moderate increases in the general fund revenue as the economy improves. We can expect new development to generate additional general fund revenue. But, again, I think in looking at that, at least in the near future, neither of those are going to be enough to overcome the current condition of the streets. That is that they're so severely deteriorated, we cannot overcome the condition and the rate of deterioration, even with additional funds coming in the short term. We may be able to maintain more of the major connecting streets, but again, short-term strategy is basically pretty much to hang on and create this grid network of streets in relatively good condition. Looking ahead to what are some potential long-term strategies, again, what happens if we continue the current annual funding, continue to apply for grants, as the economy improves, apply as much of the new income as we have to street repair? But what if we occasionally seek a major investment in the street network? Well, we could use a large investment to overcome that obstacle caused by the existing condition and deterioration rate of the city streets. It's the leapfrog. We can leap over that obstacle possibly with a large influx of cash. We could improve the condition of some or all the major connecting streets, again, depending on funding level. And then we could use local funds to sustain major connecting streets and replace and repair a few residential streets each year. And in my opinion, without the occasional major investment in street repair, we really don't have a viable long-term strategy. Again, existing funds just cannot keep up with the condition and deterioration of the existing streets. Thinking about a major investment, some options might be to, again, develop a grid of streets that will always be in good condition, sort of a continuing with the short-term strategy. We could maintain that grid for the maximum lifespan by applying some of that money toward just maintenance on those streets after they've been rehabilitated. We, again, could apply existing funding to maintaining major and repairing local streets. And then one option would be to about the lifespan of a street, 20 to 30 years, to seek a reinvestment at that time. But it's possible, too, that the income level at the city could reach a point where we could sustain the streets without a reinvestment at some point in the future. That outcome really depends primarily on the size and the frequency of a major investment. There's a range of options between a large single investment and smaller incremental investments. You know, one idea would just, why don't we just get a huge chunk of money? Maybe $40 million, as you see on the slide, could probably repair most of the city streets. We try to do one extremely large construction project, which probably would be infeasible. The investment costs would most likely be less. The only downside, I think it would take longer to see the overall benefit. Looking at some dollar figures and seeing kind of how that plays out, if we did smaller investments in one or more year increments, say a couple of $5 million investments for a total of $10 million, we could repair approximately half of the major connecting streets with that. That really wouldn't propel you much further. If you did a number of $5 million investments adding up to approximately $20 million, you could repair all the major connecting streets and a few of the local streets. And somewhere around $35 million, you would be able to repair all the major connecting streets and really most of the residential streets. So there's a number right there between $35 and $40 million where you should be hitting almost all the streets within the city.
Yes. You don't mention anything about the cost of each of these options. Isn't there a greater cost, a more significant cost, in the lower, the $10 million, $20 million, and $40 million, isn't there quite a difference in the cost of those programs?
Yes, and I know that Mr. Pache will be talking about that later. Okay. That's really a financing discussion,
okay,
which is...
Good. Thank you.
I wasn't a finance major, so I'll leave that to the experts. I think some other ideas that we really should be thinking about, though... you know, in trying to create a system that's sustainable, looking very, very far into the future, we really should be thinking about reducing street widths. You know, we have the majority of our streets are 40 to 46 feet wide. We could get away with a 36-foot wide street, which would be really two 10-foot, well, at least on the local streets. And that would consist of two 10-foot travel lanes and two 8-foot parking areas. If we were to do that, reduce from 46 to 36, we'd have approximately 15% reduction in paved area. So looking at the cost of maintaining 9.3 million square feet of pavement, 15% reduction is pretty significant. Some ways to consider doing that might be to construct center medians, construct widened parkways, or possibly even relocate the sidewalks further out into the street. But, you know, with that would come definitely some upfront costs. It wouldn't be free. And there probably would be some reduction in paved area, but certainly a reduction in the size of a paving project as much as 30%. And that's really significant. But there are some problems. The challenge would be some erosion and tracking of the deteriorating asphalt in the pavement, in the parking area. And, of course, the maintenance of that parking area could eventually become a real challenge for us. One kind of far out idea, but not completely impossible, is that, you know, we have the option of maybe abandoning some select streets. You know, we could sort of shrink the network of streets a little bit. There are some streets that we do own in fee. The other streets, I'm not totally sure how that would work to abandon them, but we could certainly think about removing certain east, west, or north, south streets. As you know, there's a number of streets that don't go all the way through, even today. So, again, a kind of a far-out idea, but I think in terms of looking long-term, we really need to think about creating a smaller system that's more sustainable. So those are pretty much what I call the facts of street maintenance costs, short-term and long-term outlooks. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. And if not, we'll move on to Mr. Pache's presentation.
Any questions from the council on that?
I think two. It may end up being more than that, but we'll start with two. So thank you for that, Greg. That was actually very informative, and I appreciate the 2x4 approach. That worked well. Global question for you is, we're in the process of approving an ordinance for stormwater through the regional board. If we do long-term maintenance and all of these potential repairs, how much do you think would that ordinance affect this? I know it's completely kind of going down a different path, but obviously we're going to have some environmental concerns and so forth to consider. So any thought of how that may be getting too far into the details, but just globally, Have you thought of where that might take us?
I have. If you look, generally, asphalt repair within the existing roadway, even if it's complete replacement, is still considered maintenance. And so in terms of regulating ourselves with our new stormwater requirements, we wouldn't have additional requirements or costs associated with that. If we're talking about reducing pavement area, I think actually looking long-term, widening or narrowing the streets could actually provide a stormwater enhancement and maybe even some opportunities for projects that can't do stormwater work on site to contribute off-site to an improvement. So.
Gotcha. Next question is one of your slides, and it's page 4 in the presentation. It's the one that shows the short-term strategy 1 through 13, those streets. Do you have a picture of how that grid lays out through the city? So I as soon as that slide came up, it's like, I probably should have asked that before the meeting, so I apologize if
I don't have a picture with me, no. Okay. I mean, it's generally about every third to fourth street east to west, and as you can see, just the major streets north-south.
Okay. Because I guess where I was potentially going with that is to see how much of the city those streets actually provide access to. Is it 75% of the residences? Is it 50%? I think by doing that grid, it gets the majority of the residences within a block or two of a very, which would then be an improved street. So just thinking along those lines. And then a last question for the moment is, I know we're working on a CDGB and community development and block grant project for water lines. Staff did a great job of putting together an application that was successfully put forward to do waterline replacements, which we may then consider at some future point of doing some road work associated with that. Is there other projects or other opportunities out there for that? I know you mentioned, and maybe this is for Mr. Pache, if it becomes grant funds or loan dollars or other funding sources, are those programs still available?
Well, there are still limited grant funds available for major regional roadways. Not a lot, but I do believe that we're being recommended for funding on Oak Park. Not full funding, but with a small matching funds, hopefully, and some participation with some neighboring cities. Oak Park could end up being repaired in the near future. CDBG funds, you know, the most recent call for projects was specifically related to water. So if they happen to come out with a call for projects that's related to street repair, of course, we would...
The estimate of how much it would cost to repair or refurbish the streets, generally speaking, pulverizing the entire section and putting aggregate base back in, pavement, maybe some ribbon gutters, or do we take what we have now and remove it and put back in a good structural section based upon traffic indices and all of that? Or is that those details that you just said, we're going to take a 2-on-6 section and move forward everywhere for an estimate?
Yeah, the number that I presented earlier in the slide, about $10 a square foot for street repair. You know, it's an average, and certainly the approach wouldn't be a blunt force approach like that. It would be a very targeted approach based on the particular street we're repairing. You know, some streets, if they don't have existing base, and the street's fully deteriorated, it depends on the street section. We may be able to pulverize the existing asphalt, use it as base and subbase, add material to it, and pave on top of it. We may need to completely remove a section and put in base and pave over the top. So there's a number of different approaches for rehabilitation, including grind and overlay, and then maybe some more targeted treatments like spot repairs and slurry or cape seals, chip seals, that kind of thing. So it's a really average cost looking at a range of options. And clearly, we don't need 90-something million to fix all the streets. We're really about half that.
Right. Okay.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Maybe just a quick one. So if I understood the costs that we're spending right now, we contribute maybe $250,000 to $350,000, just the city, to the street program, and then we get the remaining you double that by outside grants. Is that
the average over the last 10 years has been that. So there have been some spikes where the city's contributed as much as $600,000 in local funding. There have been some lean years where it's contributed, you know, in the range of $180,000, I think was the low, and then supplemented by grants. But looking at a 10-year average, it's averaged out to just over $700,000.
So that really just buys us pothole repair for the fiscal year?
No. The pothole repair is actually taken out of a different fund, again, local funding, but we spend about $50,000 a year on pothole repairing. And other miscellaneous repairs, spot repairs.
I'm just kind of thinking, have you put together kind of a list of what that would buy you? Let's say any sort of how many miles of road with chip seal versus, you know, as opposed to doing overlay, or are the roads so bad at 50 PCI that they have to be overlaid, or can we do other alternative chip seals or micro seals or just thin overlays? We haven't really evaluated that just yet.
So we had a pavement management analysis done. The original one's probably pushing 10 years old, which was a fairly detailed analysis with some updates that were done 6 years ago and a more recent update about 3 years ago. But they've really been, you know, spot updates based on a sample selection of streets. The original analysis provided sort of a generalized approach to how much complete replacement would you need, how much mill and overlay would you need, how much spot repair and slurry seal would you need, and how much just slurry seal would you need. But I think, each year with the funding sources available, we would look to stretch those dollars as far as possible. Probably leaning more towards spot repair and chip and slurry seals versus full grind and replace or mill and overlays, if possible. However, some of the major streets that still do need repair, I think you're in a position where that a grind and overlay is probably the minimum you could get away with.
Hmm. So out of the 44 miles of roadway we have, I didn't see in here, what is our average? How many miles do we repair every year? I mean, that kind of, I don't know if you have that, and it's not that critical, but it's obviously a very low percentage.
Yeah, historically, I mean, you can see, for example, 2010, it was a section of South 4th Street consumed all the dollars.
Looking back a number of years,
2008, yeah. Northern section of 4th consumed all the dollars that year. It's usually one or two streets and a handful of blocks on each of those.
And that's with the local match funding. That's the 700,000 figure as opposed to the 350,000. Okay. Thanks, Greg.
Council Member Nichols?
You through?
Sorry, were you done?
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong. We grants that we get, and if I'm not mistaken, that are available, are for major arterial streets, not for the local residential streets. And I know that that's one of the complaints we've had from a lot of the residents. They see us doing a lot of work on Grand Avenue or on South 4th Street or on Oak Park Boulevard, which are all in Atlantic City, major streets, and they want to know why we're spending all that money on those major streets and the residential streets that are in worse condition, we don't spend any money on. Is that correct, or am I off base?
It's correct, and maybe a little more details to that. The few local streets that have been repaired using grant funds have been either Safe Routes to School or CDBG projects that have been done in the past. The majority of street repair grant funding comes from the Federal Highway Administration, FHWA, and it is for a system of streets that's identified at the federal level, that's on a map, and there are only arterials and collectors in the city. and you cannot use that money anywhere else. And then to further complicate matters, as I mentioned earlier, when we talk about creativity and leveraging those funds, by and large, those funds do not come to us to maintain streets. They come for, you know, bikeway, pedestrian enhancements, slowing traffic, traffic safety improvements. You know, they're not for street repair.
Correct.
We leverage them to get the funds because we want the improvements. The city council wants the improvements because they further other goals that the city has. But, you know, to the extent we can, we use our local match on street repairs within those sections. So the grant funds just aren't out there for street repairs.
Thank you.
Yeah, Council Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yeah, I guess so.
You can come back.
Thank you. Would you mind just talking a little bit about the patch truck and what types of projects that might be able to repair?
So, for example, the county has a patch truck. And what basic it is, there's really two kinds of asphalt. There's cold mix asphalt, which you can, it's not hot. You can mix products that are much tackier. We actually tried them. We bought a couple pallets last year to see how that could be integrated into our pothole patching program. And honestly, they didn't really work much better. So what is the other kind of asphalt? Hot mix asphalt. And that comes from the plant very hot. You have to keep it hot. And you can still throw it in the back of a pickup, but you have to get it over here pretty quick-like, and you have to get it in the repair area, the patch area, quickly. And then you need to compact it with a roller or some other device. The challenge with that is that you really have a very limited amount of time to use it. You have to have a truck capable of carrying hot material. A patch truck has a heated hopper or heated containment area for asphalt, which means that you could buy hot mix asphalt and keep it hot, even for a period of days. You could then, using that truck, it has other machinery on it that allows you to spread the asphalt. But the primary purpose is really just to keep it hot. And a hot mix repair, which you've seen us hire local contractors to do from time to time, those repairs tend to last for a long time. So if you see larger repair areas that we've done, and we've done some this year, we did a number of them last year, primarily intersections where Toast or one of the other local paving companies has come out, that's hot mix asphalt repair. A patch truck could allow us to do small areas. And I think we would completely abandon the pothole patching program with cold mix except in an emergency case. So then the
hot mix lasts much longer than the cold mix. How much longer would you say?
Oh, years longer.
Okay.
Tens of years longer.
So it could really be a savings, particularly in the manpower area.
Yes. I mean, it has a number of benefits. If we could finance a patch truck with some of the funds we're currently using for pothole patching and maybe a small amount of other funds we use for local street repairs, we could target some heavily damaged areas, maybe some intersections, some areas that have fallen apart, and we could potentially repair those ourselves. And they should last.
On Karen's question, would you have the staffing to maintain the... I mean, it sounds like you keep them busy, your staff busy 7 days a week.
You could. I mean, you could...
But with the truck, you'd have to have additional staff as well, I suspect.
Yeah, that would be one of the issues we'd have to really look at is that something we could do on an intermittent basis and would the truck perform well on an intermittent basis, or is it something that needs to be used consistently? I think the best of all worlds would be if the truck could have a long lifespan with a fairly inexpensive maintenance cycle, and we could use it intermittently with existing staff, and it turned out to be a great cost savings for us. I don't know if that's that all of those things are true. So we have to do a lot more research.
Looks like we're good up here. Would anyone from the public have any questions on any of this just now? Okay. Before we go on to Mr. Pichet, I'd like to introduce some of the folks out in the audience. So those of you who aren't members of the city know who they are. We have a former mayor and council member, Jack Keane, sitting in the back there. So we'll look forward to I hope you're going to tell us some good stories and give us some suggestions. And we also have John LaFerrière, who is our the chair of our planning commission. Thank you for coming tonight, John. And we have Chief Copsey, who's our police chief and assistant city manager in the back there. And sitting next to him is Bruce Buckingham, who's our community development director. And I think that covers everybody else has a name plate, so you'll know who the rest of us are. And Greg, I had a couple of questions, or maybe just one. All of this information is really helpful. Is this going to be posted on the city's website so folks can look at it and mull over it?
Yes.
Good. Soon. Okay, great. So I think with that, Mr. Pichet, if you could come forward and talk to us about money, that would be great.
Madam Mayor, if yes. I could, before Mr. Pichet gets started, I just want to emphasize, I think Greg has covered it in response to especially Councilmember Nichols' question, but again, grant alternatives just do not look very promising on the future. As you're aware, sitting on the SLOCOG board, the federal transportation legislation has just been enacted.
Map from them, and we've been able to leverage it. But I was working based on your question, Glenn. I was looking at how many miles a year, and it looks like over the last 6 years, or 4 years, in fact, 2007 through 2010, we've done about a mile a year with 44 miles, and that's all been mostly on main roads with 44 miles. That would take us, you know, 1 mile a year for 44 years, and that's with grant funding, so that we can't make that fly.
No, plus it deteriorates within...
Sure. How many years? Yeah, 20. Years. So we need to do at least twice that. Yeah, to stay where we are. So, okay. Okay, I think we're done.
Okay. Good evening, Mayor and Honorable Council. My name is Albert Pichet, and I'm here to discuss some financing options should you want to provide a long-term solution to what seems to be a long-term problem here at the city of Grover Beach. So with that, cities have four, as Mr. Ray suggested, items in the toolbox, financing mechanisms that cities can use, and I'm going to go through each of these for you, are assessment bonds, Melrose bonds, which are also called special tax bonds, city general fund leasing options, and then general obligation bonds. So let me just describe how assessment bonds, how they work. Assessment is based, basically an engineer would come and just decide, you would decide how much the improvements would want to be spread. So let's say you wanted $10 million. They would provide an engineering report that would spread the assessment on the properties through that affected area through the entire city. And then they would designate a certain amount to each property. So it requires an engineer's report, and those would typically run, I think, a minimum of about $30,000. There would be no that would have to come out of the city's general fund or perhaps the street fund because there is no assessment district yet that's been formed. It's usually for specific areas and particularly new large developments. So it's rarely, if ever, done where you see an entire city that's put into the assessment district. So the pros and cons, it's a property owner vote, so it's not a registered voter vote, it's a property owner vote. So it's a minority protest whereby if 51% of the people receiving the assessments, the property owners receiving the assessments, protest, then it gets overturned. And there's a direct connection between the project and the benefit to each parcel. So where there's going to be a new development going in, the developer comes and says, I want to have tax exempt financing available for the streets and curbs and gutters. Let me form an assessment district. He's got one vote, and it gets formed, and then that gets put onto the property tax. Okay, so it's pretty straightforward then because it's a simple one or two developer vote, and you'll see that in farmland or raw land being converted into single-family developments. Okay. So, again, in the case of a Belarus bond or, again, special tax, the city would create a special taxing district, and it's known as Community Facilities District. In this particular case, it's registered voters, not just property owners, but registered voters that would vote on it, and it would be a two-thirds requirement. Okay. So instead of an engineer's report, the city hires a special tax consultant who develops a rate and method of apportionment on how to apportion that to the different properties than the city. Again, I'd like to say it's usually used for specific areas, particularly large new developments. So where would you see an assessment district versus a Belarus district? You would probably see a Belarus district when you also had to build a new school. You needed to do more than the streets, curbs, and gutters. You had to develop a new school and or parks, so you would see a Belarus district. But again, in a new development, it's a simple property owner vote, and he would probably, obviously, he would want to vote yes for it because he's going to be dedicating those facilities and streets and curbs and gutters to the proper entities and schools and or cities. Okay. So the pros would be the homes could be one fixed special tax. You could have all homes $200 per home per year. Commercial could be taxed based off square footage. The bonds could be sold in series, or taxes in this particular case could be used as pay-as-you-go with proceeds available for maintenance and improvements. Problem would be how much would you be able to generate per year to do long-term projects. So that could be a potential problem in using just pay-as-you-go. So the arguments against it, it's subject to registered voter approval. Again, not property owners, as in the case of special assessments. Lower ratings and therefore higher interest costs. And this actually pertains to both the assessment bonds and the Belarus bonds. But when it was passed on to property owners, they were stuck with the higher taxes. Now, they would have been stuck with a higher purchase price had that been put into the purchase price of the property. But people hear taxes. You may recall you'd see developments where it would say, and no Belarus taxes here. However, they were paying for it in the ultimate price of the home anyway. The third financing item in the toolbox would be general fund leasing. So city basically would enter into lease agreements for certain types of projects. So that could be for street repair. But it requires budget adjustments because it's coming out of the general fund. So there's really no source of new funds for this. So it is a way that cities use to finance certain projects, but probably not street repair. One of the things is that it has limited applicability because of the collateral requirements. So you have to have, if you're going to put in $10 million of street improvements, you're going to have an asset that is going to be subject to the lease of at least $10 million. So what cities do is they typically would finance the subject of the lease might be the city hall or the maintenance yard. So you're really limited to the size of the lease agreement to the amount of collateral that you can pledge, okay, in addition to the annual payments that are, again, have to be offset in the general fund. Okay. So the pros, there's no voter approval. It's a accepted form of municipal finance. So what the city does is they annually appropriate to make these lease payments. So every year the city would appropriate, okay, the debt service is the amount we're going to have to annually appropriate to make these payments. So the cons, again, requires budget adjustments to make room for debt service, lower ratings, higher interest costs, and amount borrowed is limited to the value of the city assets. What I'd like to say, what I didn't put on these slides, which apply to all three financing mechanisms, is that you also have to have a reserve fund, typically 10% of the issue size. So let's say you're borrowing $5 million, $5 million of that, about $500,000 roughly, is going to be required to be set aside in a reserve fund that is going to be there should you not make any of the payments. Financing. It's a tax based off all assessed value of taxable properties within the district. It requires a two-thirds voter authorization. Cities are allowed to issue up to 3.75% of their assessed value in GO bonds. So you actually put the amount that you're borrowing on the ballot, and that's reflected in the ballot initiative along with the project description. So the tax rate is calculated each July and based off debt service divided by total assessed valuation for that fiscal year in the city limits. So a lot is dependent upon the assessed value. As assessed value grows, and we'll probably see that a little bit down, it actually, to the extent that you're using level debt service, it can actually lower the tax rate because there is more and more property, assessed property, that's absorbing the debt service. And bonds can be sold in series. What I mean by series is you'll have multiple bond issues, thereby minimizing the impact of taxpayers. So you don't, typically you don't see somebody go out and issue all of their authorization at once. You'll see it being issued in series because, number one, you have to expend the proceeds within 3 years for tax purposes, a reasonable expectation that those proceeds can be spent is required within 3 years. And two, you don't want to throw all that tax rate onto the taxpayers. So you want to kind of ease them into it and also let assessed value grow. So the pros are that they receive the highest rating. So they have the lowest interest cost. Here, no reserve fund is required. So you don't have to have the 10% reserve fund for general obligation bonds. The annual tax, as I mentioned, will generally decrease when using level debt service and there is increasing assessed value. Okay? So, and this is an important point, and taxes are based off assessed value, not market value. So because of Proposition 13, assessed value can typically only grow 2% a year, even if the market value doubles in size. It's important that voters understand that they are paying on assessed value, not market value. I didn't mention this, but under the assessment bonds and Mello-Roos bonds, there's an annual administration that gets charged that has to be added to the debt service because somebody has to come in and go tax rate. So I think it's the best way to finance street improvements and storm drains over an extended period of time. So some of the cons are two-thirds approval required by voters. Adjacent homes may have different annual taxes depending on when the property was purchased. So somebody that's been in the property a long time gets the benefit of having a lower assessed value than market value. There's no ability for the property owner to prepay the tax obligation. In the case of assessment bonds or Mello-Roos bonds, that figure can be prepaid. It would be, depending on what the number is, a big number that the property owner, in the case of assessment bonds and Mello-Roos bonds, can prepay and have their obligation extinguished. Okay. With an assessed value or a general obligation bond, that just continues on with the property. It cannot fund equipment maintenance or other projects not defined as capital improvements. So capital improvements would be replacing the entire street. Potholing would not be part of that. That's more of a maintenance issue. Okay. So let me give you some background information on the city of Grover Beach. In 2012, the assessed value was $1.2 million, and it increased about almost 5% to 2014, a little bit over $1.3 million. So based off of this...
$3 billion?
Billion, excuse me. Billion, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nichols. Let me go over that again. So in 2012-13, the assessed value of the city was $1.2 billion. And in 2013-14, it increased almost 5% to a little over $1.3 billion. Thank you. So based off of that, the city's bonding capacity is $49 million. Now, the city can actually request more in bonding capacity, but those would be authorized by the voters, but they cannot be issued until the assessed value were to grow to where you would take existing GO bonds plus any new GO bonds, and you could then issue. So what I would say here is that you could actually request more in voter authorization, but you would be limited to, at any one time, 3.75% of your assessed value in GO bonds at any one time. So the average single-family home, family parcels, and about 250 fall into the $252,000 range. So it's not fair to say, when I start getting into numbers, what would it cost the average property taxpayer? There's too big of a range to discuss it on that basis, and I'll go over that in a minute. So the assessed value by land use in the city consists of 15% of non-residential and 85% of residential parcels. The largest components are single family, almost 60%, condo and townhomes, about 12%, and then commercial and office, about 11%. So tying into Mr. Ray's potential scenarios, scenario one of $10 million authorization, repair approximately half of the major streets. Scenario number two, $20 million authorization, repair all of the major streets and a few others. And then scenario three would be $35 million in authorization, repair all of the major streets and most of the residential streets. So I had to use some assumptions, and I went over these with staff. So based off your current assessed value of $1.3 billion, a 2% increase in assessed value, which is conservative because it typically grows at 2% a year. For 2014, it would be $1,335,000,000. So I assumed a 25-year maturity interest rate of 5.5%. Level debt service, where any increase in assessed value would help to lower the tax rate. Just to get the thing started, we assumed a $5 million GO bond issuance every 3 years starting in 2014-15. Again, wanted to point out that the proceeds have to be spent within 3 years for tax purposes, or there should be a reasonable expectation they should be spent within 3 years. No use of capital appreciation bonds, which are bonds that do not pay any interest, but instead pay principal and interest at maturity, and that requires further analysis. So this is pretty straightforward, just to look at some numbers here. Okay. So scenario one, issuing $10 million in authorization. So there would be two $5 million bond issuances. So there'd be a $5 million bond issuance in 2014-15. The tax rate per $100,000 of assessed value, it would be $28.
So 28 and 28 is 56. Five, so 56, and then another half for 250,000 is the average home. Then you're looking at about $70. Is that $70 a month? $70 a year?
No, $70 a year.
A year, and we could $70 a year. Okay.
So, but that would be the average. But as I said, the average is a lot less. There's some a lot less. So let's say that some people have a home of 100,000 or right around 100,000, they can expect a tax bill of about $28. If somebody had a $500,000 home, multiply that by 530, that would be about $140 per year. Mm-hmm. And it gets collected twice a year, December 10th and April 10th, along with your property taxes. Okay. Back up. Thank you, Mr. Ray. So let me just kind of go through this. So assuming the first $5 million issuance would be in 2014-15, the tax rate would be $28 per $100,000. When the second bond issue would come in 2017-18, the tax rate would be about $52 per $100,000. So you could see that assuming a 2% growth in assessed value, it doesn't really double to 56. The tax rate is only 52, so it's $4 less. So this is the benefit of increasing assessed value and issuing the bonds in series.
And that's based on a conservative
that's very conservative because we probably the rates are probably a little bit below 5.5%. We don't know where rates would be a month from now, certainly not 2 years from now. So when I say conservative, it probably used a higher rate than current market. And I use 25 years in terms of a maturity for the general obligation bonds. And I assume level debt service. So debt service is roughly the same within $5,000 to $6,000 per year.
Thank you.
Now, these are the rates in reference to the general obligation bond.
That is correct.
Okay, and the scenario that you're talking about is dependent on the amount of money, the amount of the bond.
That
10
is
million versus
right.
20 million versus 30 million.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And as I described here, Mr. Nichols, this would have a $5 million bond issue in 2014-15, and then 3 years later, another $5 million bond. And then taking it a step further, scenario two.
Actually, one before you before you do that. And that would stay on the tax bill for 25 years?
That's correct.
Okay. Just want to confirm.
So you're saying that
dollars per 100,000. 3 years after that, 2023, 24, it would be $93 per 100,000 of assessed value. And before I go to scenario three, I think this is conservative because that assumes a 2% growth in assessed value.
Right.
Now, if there's higher growth in assessed value, these taxes would be lower, and obviously if interest rates were to go down, these taxes would also be lower. But this is dependent upon how much do you want to issue, where can we spend the money, what are the interest rates, where is the assessed value going? Okay. So scenario three just builds on the prior two scenarios where you add an additional $5 million bond issues, 26, 27, 29, 30, and then 20, 32, 33, and the tax rate would then be $110 per 100,000, respectively $124 per 100,000, and then it would end up at about $136 per 100,000.
So, question for you on that.
Sure.
If using the $35 million scenario, you get up to the approximately 15 years after you start the process, mm-hmm. you're at the highest, and then as 10 years later, the first $5 million starts to come off, and then after that, the next $5 million starts to come off. So you start to kind of ramp down.
Right.
About 10 years after that scenario three would.
Exactly correct.
Sir. Okay.
Now, and that's where you could look at using capital appreciation bonds. That don't pay any interest, but that could get filled into the latter years. As you say, some of the debt service from the earlier bond issues start to come off, and you could add bonds in the latter years that don't pay any interest until the latter part of their maturity that could be added on.
Okay.
And okay, so some bonds are coming off, some new bonds are coming on, basically.
Okay. And so then the rate would stay the same for a little bit longer, but you'd have additional funds.
Yeah, you'd have additional funds. That's
okay.
correct. Yeah, I mean, conceivably, if the assessed value really took off, I mean, you could have the same tax rate by issuing in the latter years that you would have in the beginning years or closer to the earlier tax rate than you would in these projections because it only assumes
2%. Gotcha.
Before I discuss this, there was a question from Mr. Nichols about the cost of financing. So those costs, I think for a $5 million issue, would probably be about 3% of the bond issue cost. And those go to issue bonds. So how do you pass a bond issue? I'll just quickly say that a school's had a lot of experience in this starting in the 80s and 90s. The first portion of that, 86 through, I'd say almost through the mid-90s, they were just really guessing. And then they got smart and they said, you know what? Rather than guess what our voters will support, why don't we do a bond poll? And they have been very successful at passing bond issues, and that's what I think cities are moving towards. So a bond poll will provide a lot of information to the city. Explore current image of the city of Grover Beach among registered voters. And the poll, by the way, doesn't just survey registered voters, it surveys likely registered voters. So you have a lot of people that are actual voters, but that really don't come out. So those you want to exclude those. You really want to poll likely registered voters. Okay, so determine what voter perceptions of city street-related improvements, the improvements that you need, including storm drains, and that priorities that the voters set for those needs. It determines voter attitudes toward a possible bond measure and the optimum amount of bond authorization and tax rate to place before the voters. So it really tests what tax rate the voters would likely be in support of a bond measure and what projects they would like to see. Here it ties into the next bullet point. Evaluate voters' top priority for money raised in order to design a measure that best addresses the desires of the community for a level of street improvements and the corresponding tax rate that would help determine the chances for success of a bond measure. It helps to determine the most effective and important reasons for your voters to vote for a bond election. It provides you with any potential issues or money used for the bonds that would present a danger that they would really come out and vote against it. It determines the best election date to place the measure before the ballot, whether in the general election or the primary ballot. So in 2014, we have a primary ballot in June, and we have a general election, in November, a little bit less than a year from now. Election and identify the keys for changing public perceptions. So rather than just throwing money at an election, which is what school districts pretty much did in the 80s and early 90s and would lose, there's a cost of an election that the city does not get recouped should it lose, or a school district for that matter, anybody, any agency issuing. So they determined that the best way was to do this scientific polling, and having done a number of them having assisted with a number of school districts and community colleges, these things are very accurate, within 3%, depending on how many people you want to support, plus or minus 3%. Okay. So the members of the bond team and their pre-election roles is a polling consultant. He prepares a survey based off the city's project list, conducts a poll of likely registered voters to determine support for a possible bond measure and just some of those other things that we discussed in the prior slides. There's a bond council, prepares the legal documentation for the city council calling for a bond election, works with the city staff and bond team to prepare the ballot initiative. It's financial advisor, prepares a numerical analysis showing how different GO bond structures affect different levels of assessed value that gets used in the poll. And finally, should the city decide to move forward, it would prepare a tax rate statement that becomes part of the ballot information going to voters. Okay. So what are the next steps? So I think that's been done, but the long-term capital needs of the city and develop a potential project list, determine a financing structure, hire polling consultant, bond counsel, and financial advisor to begin the development of a public opinion poll with potential city projects and various tax rates. Conduct the poll, determine specifics of the bond measure and whether to proceed with a June or November election. Determine the bond authorization amount, and then prepare the ballot initiative. There's a documentation that'll have to be prepared, calling the election, and then the ballot initiative and the tax rate statement itself. So I think in closing, as Mr. Perrault said, cities have been dealt a big blow in the summer of 2011 when they lost redevelopment. And I think a number of cities are now going back to looking at general obligation bonds. And schools have been using this tool for quite some time. So with that...
Information at all?
No, I have not, Mr. Nichols.
The results of the bond issues was extremely good in the last election. Bob, do you remember more of that than I do?
Unfortunately, no, and it's not here with me right now.
Okay, and I don't have it either, but I wondered if you had seen that, because the results were very good, and I'm curious as to, would be interesting to go back to those communities where they did have the bond issues that did pass, and most of them were school bond issues, and find out what procedure they used.
Well, I can tell you from experience and from direct knowledge that when school districts put these on the ballot, they have done a survey, if not one, maybe even two surveys. No school district is going to go out that I know of without doing this kind of survey. Now, they did that in the 80s and the early 90s, but they were often losing, especially with the two-thirds threshold that they were required to have at the time until that changed.
Correct.
In November of 2000. Under Prop 39, they were actually able to go to a 55% vote, but they had a lot of other criteria that I won't get into. But they were passing them. In fact, I worked on one of the second, either the first or second general obligation bond elections for school districts that were then allowed to issue starting in 1986. It was 1987. And back then, the business manager basically walked the community trying to promote the bond issue, and that actually passed. But you had a lot of areas that didn't pass. So, again, they became sophisticated in the mid-90s, and I can tell you school districts will not start any of this process without having a poll that'll give them an idea, a roadmap to potential victory. And in some cases, it may tell them it's not worth your time, this is what you need to do, don't waste the money on an election and going out and failing. And that's important information as well.
Well, that could be why the results were so positive.
Exactly.
That so many passed.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of the other council members recall that information with any detail?
Yes. I don't remember it in detail, but I do remember reading it. I was quite surprised at how successful.
Yeah.
I remember generally when there was kind of a trend when they went out with, if they asked for too much or too many things, then they failed. There were a few that failed. But the ones that were conservative and seemed reasonable succeeded.
Okay. I just think there's something.
So any dollars that were raised would have to be put solely to that project and not to maintain anything after that.
That is correct. I think the strategy would be, and Mr. Ray can discuss this, if you can get a lot of new streets in, then the money that you do have would be more towards the maintenance.
Right.
And I would like to say that this could help you with any matching funds. You know, this could be your portion of matching funds for any street repair. I don't get involved in grants, but what I have seen is that there are less and less grants available. But those grants that are available, and there are more people, you know, putting in for the grants, those grants have typically been requiring matching funds.
Mm-hmm. Very often, yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That was my only question at this point.
Okay. Down here, any questions?
Just once again, thank you, definitely. Sure. It was very good. So you were talking about maybe if we went just for the $5 million bond, you were talking maybe 5% of the cost. So we're looking at $250,000 roughly.
You know, maybe somewhere 3 to 4 in that area.
Is that money you can also recoup? I mean, can you use the bond?
Well, that's a good question. In some cases, you can put in certain cost of issuance, you know, back into the tax rate because it's really pennies on the dollar at that point. And it would depend on whether bond council would say that's an eligible cost to be put into the tax rate or that has to come out of the project proceeds. Okay.
And that would carry through to maybe even the cost for the vote and during the election?
You can. I have seen.
It's possible, though, to wrap it all up?
Right. I have seen, well, it's common in school districts where they can recoup the cost of the election from the proceeds of the bond issue itself.
Okay. But initially, the city would have to come up with that. Cash.
That is correct for the election. Okay. That is correct.
Thank you. Very, very good presentation.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I'll reiterate that as well. Thank you for that. Mine is kind of maybe a wandering question. On one of your slides, you talked about four different opportunities. Let's say we went through and down this path. Could we use more than one of these options? Let's say an assessment district mm-hmm. works better in South Grover and a general obligation bond works better in Northeast Grover type mm-hmm. of thing. So is there any economy of scale or would we confuse the voters by putting both of them on the ballot at the same time? Mm-hmm. Or how kind of roadmap from that perspective?
You know, thinking out loud, and that's a bit very good, have the opportunity to say we're going to put this city into the this portion of the city into the general obligation bond and tax that area only. You can't do that. It has to be citywide. But you can, as you've said we want to put this into an assessment district.
Okay. So we could do multiple assessment districts.
Right.
Kind of to kind of balance off, okay, this portion of the city needs this much dollars, assess them differently than this other section of the city which needs X, Y number of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. That is correct.
Okay. Could I piggyback on that just briefly? And then I'll give you the floor back.
No, I'm good.
Okay. So would it be possible to do assessment bonds, but for the government areas that, for the city's areas that would need to be paid for, could we do then a general fund lease financing to cover the city's costs?
Interesting. Yes, you could.
You could double up on those two. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So let me just make sure I understand your question, Mayor. You're asking, let's say that we wanted to put the entire city into an assessment district or multiple either one assessment district or multiple assessment mm-hmm. districts. The city portion could not be passed on because there'd be no benefit to the other property owners. So you're asking, can those properties that the city would have to pay for, could you use general fund leasing for those? And
yes.
The answer would be yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. With a proviso that the amount, you still have to provide an asset equal to the value that you were borrowing. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to add that.
Right. You still have to secure the loan, basically.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What about, I have a couple of other questions on, what is it that Los Osos is doing? Do you know? I'm just curious. I know. Well, it's interesting because when I sell property out there, we have to disclose that there's, I can't remember exactly what it is, but I think it's about $30,000 that they have to pay, and I think it runs at about $250 a month. It's a moving target, so I haven't looked at the target really recently. But it's interesting because it's a big chunk of change, and they don't see the difference when they flush the toilets. The streets are a huge change. I mean, people would really see the difference on the streets, and we're not proposing anything like that rate at this point.
The only thing that I could tell you about, and you know better than I because you're in the area, is that they had a major wastewater treatment plant that they had to put in.
Right.
And so they were previously they were all on septic tanks, and they were required to vote. So they were required to pay. And the way they did it was to put it on the property tax.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Are there questions from the audience? Do people want to ask questions or make comments about any of this?
I have one more question.
Oh, you have? Okay, well, go ahead, Bill, and then Jack, I'll have you come up and ask.
Is there anything negative about if we were to go out for a general obligation bond, and let's say in the amount of $35 million, and this, we issue them out over a period of time, $5 million at a time. By the time we get to $25 million, we have almost accomplished our goal, and we recognize that we are not going to need the $35 million that we have been authorized. Is there any drawback to that insofar as going out initially for $35 million and then not having to spend all of that?
No. I think it's better to do it that way than to go out and say, oh, we need $15 million more and we're not going to be able to complete the projects. Then you got to go back to your voters and say, well, we erred. We actually need a lot more. So to answer your question specifically, you don't have to issue all of the authorization that you've asked your voters for.
Okay. There would be no penalties or no negative results of that.
No, you would just have that. So down the road, now you may be able to accomplish all of that in, say, 10 to 15 years, but in another 10 to 15 years, the streets have deteriorated again, and it's more important to just replace the streets than to get pothole on pothole. And so then you could issue that remaining $10 million. So,
but there is a time limit on that, is there not?
Don't believe so. I mean, there are some bond councils that say that's stale, a stale authorization. But I think if you were to describe this in the initiative as being a 25 to 30 year project, that you could issue it down the road. So you're not required to issue by in any means, by the way, on this on the issuance schedule that I provided, that was for illustration purposes. Yeah. You potentially could issue less, and you could potentially issue more.
Okay.
But I think I answered your question where you're not required to issue all of them. That would just be unused authorizations, what they would call that.
Okay. You're not penalized for that.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. And sure. I also must say that I appreciate your presentation. I think you did a very good job.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I spent a lot of time on it.
And while you're up here, you mentioned Proposition 13, and I know that there are those who would like to see Proposition 13 go away. How would that affect all of this?
Well, never envisioned that going away. I think that the assessed value would be certainly a lot higher. So the overall taxes could potentially be higher. I think what I've heard is not Prop 13 going away per se. What I have heard, and perhaps you all know better, is perhaps having a separate Prop 13 for residential homes, which could continue at the growth of 2%, and then having that not apply to commercial and industrial buildings, where they would be more at market value.
Okay,
thank you. I've never heard of the entire Prop 13, but I've heard people discuss, Mayor, that should – Prop 13 should not apply to commercial and industrial buildings.
Thank you. That's helpful. So we're not – it doesn't look as though a change would be imminent on something like that that would affect our bond over the next 20 years.
No, but if that were to happen – I'm thinking this through as I'm answering your question, Mayor. But if that were to happen, so you'd have higher assessed value for the for the commercial and industrial portion. So to the extent that was higher, it would then lower the assessed value or the tax rate for the residential portion. So they would pay less. But you have to keep in mind that only 15%, I believe it is non-residential.
Right. Thank you. So I'm going to open to public comment or questions. So, Jack, did you want to come up? And if there's anybody else who has questions, I hope you'll come forward. Or comments.
Not any questions in particular, but some observations. Mm-hmm. First of all, if you're going to go out for a bond issue to fix the streets in town, you better go for the whole ball of wax and fix every street, because the voters aren't going to vote for something or other where you're going to fix Oak Park, but you're not going to fix my street. It's got a hole in it right now that Bill Nichols knows about. And that's the way everybody in town's going to feel. The other thing, too, there's two other taxing things that are coming up on the ballots here shortly, and the one for the fire department, mm-hmm. and also Cuesta College is going to come up with a bond issue, too. So you're going to have three things at one time that the voters are going to be asked, you know, do you want to raise property taxes? And you know, I think you need to go for the whole ball of wax on this thing and go for the high number. That was my observation. You mentioned, too, about this truck to go around and fix streets that we could buy. And as I remember, those things are pretty expensive. And then you do need somebody to man the truck to go out and do it. And then you need to have the work, actually, that truck can do. Years ago, the city had its own street sweeper. For some reason or other, they bought a street sweeper and figured that would solve all of our street sweeping problems and everything. And that thing broke down constantly. I don't know whatever happened to it. The last time I saw it was sitting down in the city yard way back in the back, and it's probably junked it out by now. There was that thing that we bought, and then one time we bought a thing that would shoot hot tar into cracks in the street. And that was a disaster, too. That was a waste of about, I don't know, $10,000 or $20,000. Plus, you needed two guys to go out and do the thing, you know. So I would shoot that down. You're better off paying a company that knows what they're doing to pave the streets and pay for it and be done with it, you know. Another thing I was thinking about, too, you know, after this whole bond issue got through after, 20 or 25 years, those streets are going to have to be repaired again. I mean, we're going to have to go through the whole thing again. Is there a way of extending that bond issue for another $5 million as you go beyond the 20 years? You know.
But we can't maintain them with that money.
Can't
can't use the money to maintain.
But by that time, they would be so deteriorated, we'd have to start over again.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, let's hope
yeah,
not.
The streets are going to last about 20 years anyhow. See?
Better life cycle than that.
Yeah, that's kind of a stickling point. You know, are you talking about, you're going to have to use some fancy words to say, well, we're not repairing the street, we're replacing the street, because I don't know how you're going to get around that. But those are some observations I thought.
Thank you. That wisdom over the years is very helpful. Thanks. Any other questions or comments from the public? Please come forward and give us your name. I introduced Jack so we know who he is.
My name is Keith Rogers, and I live at 111 Carmelie Lane, Grover Beach. It's like drinking water from a fire hydrant, a lot of information to absorb here. We have 44 lineal miles of street.
Right.
And of those 44 lineal miles, how many of them are in need of replacement versus repair where we couldn't use the GOB? Do we know?
Well, as far as I know, the vast majority of them, you can take a look at that list, and I, Greg, the streets that are recently repaired, and those probably won't need a complete repair. That would be more subject to most of the maintenance work. But Mike and Greg, maybe you can help me answer that. Most of the rest of the streets are going to need some kind of significant attention, other than those that have been most recently done. Wouldn't you think?
To answer the question, I'll say cautiously yes. I think, you know, if you're looking at funding that specifically allows you to make major repairs, I think you might focus your repair or your strategy on the streets more geared toward major repairs. So you might take a street where you, with limited funds, could potentially cobble it together with a number of different approaches, and you might say, well, we have the money and this is an important street to us, so let's just completely replace it or do major repair on it, or major, you know, above and beyond what you'd kind of consider maintenance.
So would you say that we just grind and pave? Is that putting in a new street, or is that maintenance?
I think grind and overlay would qualify. Because you're extending the capital value and life of that street for a significant period of time.
Okay. One of the things I heard tonight was funds based on improving the economy. And it's been my experience with an improving economy, you have improving costs. So everything goes up. So it doesn't really mean anything.
It's just
my point of view. It's all relative. It all goes up.
Good point.
The last speaker, and I think this is most important to voters, is what does it do to my street? What does it do for the pothole in front of my street? After being here, living in this town for 34 years, I think that's the key essential to getting any bond pass. And it's, you know, it's maybe it's kind of selfish, but that's the real world. What's it going to do for my street? And if this does pass, I would say that it doesn't start with the major arteries. It starts in the neighborhood, in the core of the neighborhoods, and expands from there out.
With Brighton. No.
Yeah, well, but that's the truth of the matter to voters.
Mm-hmm.
The other, I think that's it. I'm just pleased to see that we're doing something about it. And it looks like we're going to do something now, or we're on the right track. And I think we can do something this time around. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. John LaFerriere, we introduced you. We know who you are.
Hello, John LaFerriere, Grover Beach. I like it when longtime residents tell us how long they live there, because then we know who to send the bill to for wearing out the streets.
So,
I have a few items. I would call them all concerns. I love the presentation. I love that we're here talking about this. I hate it that we had three great meetings in 2007 and we kind of took a 6-year break. So let's a hope of one thing is there's not going to be a six-year break after this session and whatever comes after it. But things I'm concerned about from, you know, thinking back to those 2007 three workshops is I'm not sure the costs are really that firm with the large numbers and what it really entitles, whether it's curb gutter, sidewalk, how nice of a street. We talked about narrowing streets and, you know, do you abandon part of the street? Do you do the medians? And those details matter, and I'm concerned that our costs are really much higher than what to do the nice new streets. I live on a pretty nice new street, and I'm not thinking that this amount of money makes all the streets nice new streets like that, curb, gutter, sidewalk, and that it's going to have to be really explained to the voters, and we're going to have to get more accurate about the cost. I'm concerned about the maintenance. You know, we don't have enough money to maintain them. The presentation was if they were all new today, we'd need the $1.6 million. The good news is we couldn't make them all new today, so we have time to grow the maintenance. But I'm concerned that you have a way to get the new streets and not maintain those new streets. I'm concerned about the future cost of financing. We're a little bit spoiled here. We're showing periods of time that extend debt service out to 2052 on the 25-year term of the example of the 2027 bond issuance. And I would think you might also request other analyses about what other more historically normal higher interest rates that cities borrowed at over the years might be to make sure that that's not another increase the cost of money, not the cost of more curb gutter sidewalk, things like that. I'm worried about the two-thirds vote. The city in 2006, when things were generally believed to be better as far as economics, made the decision to go with the general fund sales tax with a 50% vote instead of a two-thirds vote. So I'm concerned. The two-thirds vote sounds neat with some of the polling, but doesn't work out. And that is why the school bonds have their 55% level to hurdle, which is a lot easier. So I'm concerned about situations that require a two-thirds vote. And lastly, I'm concerned that we're turning it into a generational problem when we have these, well, we've got these bond issuances to do some variation of new streets and the final bond issuance, you know, those things you keep paying on those to 2042, 2048, 2052. So, you know, when the final work is done in that 2030 period, everyone just watch the streets decay while they continue to pay the debt service. And thinking of the future generations, not many of us are here in 2052. I just kind of wonder if that wasn't really a good gift. We mean well, but we give them some the same trash a lot of us showed up here with as far as streets then. So it may need an approach that succeeds beyond our time here and not repeating the kind of the past mistakes. So it seems to be too long of a period and no way to really do it well after that unless you find a way because of rising assessment values to get a new authorization and begin it all again. But I don't know, those are scary large numbers and large time frames, but so those are all concerns, but that's why we have you to figure these things out. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Anybody else got questions, comments, words of wisdom for us? Okay. I did have a question, and I wanted to say to you, Mr. Ray, this was a great report. Thank you. I know, and I'm sure you know, how much more there still is to do. But I'm wondering... when we were looking at the 5 million increments, I'm sure you're working in those increments for a reason. But practically speaking, in terms of what the community can bear, the public can stand on street repairs, and the businesses can stand, although residential won't have such an impact as our other main streets have on businesses. And in terms of what we can handle internally in the city, could we do 5 million? A year or 5 million issues of $5 million at a time. Can we handle that?
I think so. I mean, it's going to be pretty busy, and I don't mean from a staff perspective, I just mean from a general city appearance perspective. You know, $5 million worth of street repairs is going to have a lot of equipment moving and a lot of noise and, you know, and a lot of detouring. And yeah, it's going to be disruptive. But I think it's a reasonable level of project for a city this size. I've been involved in a couple of $3 and $4 million street repair projects myself. They were it's doable.
Thank you. And then I had some questions for you, Mr. Nichols. I think you're a homeowners association. Do you pay for your own streets or are those city streets?
We take care of their own streets.
And how? And I want to get a handle on what it's costing you to keep your streets up. Just out of curiosity. So I'm curious about what your homeowners' dues are, how many homes there are, and how much of that goes to streets. What's it cost you to take care of those streets?
That's a good question.
Fortunately, I think I can give you some answers.
I know, because you're the president, aren't you?
Yeah. The streets, I can tell you that North 5th Street and Bolinas Court, Pacifica Street that connects those two, and we have approximately 60,000 square feet of streets. We have in the past used the normal maintenance procedure where we put slurry coats on them, and that usually runs about $4,000 to $5,000. It's done about every 3 years. We have done that long enough now that we are in a position where we have to do some major work. I had a firm, Pavement Engineering, out of San Luis Obispo that came out and did the testing of our streets, took core samples, did deflection testing, and wrote up a very thorough report on the condition of our streets, and they do need to be rebuilt. They do have a good solid base. But we do need to do, basically, you're talking about an asphalt overlay. With the work that has to be done, we have just recently received from this pavement engineering firm a scope of work. It is going to cost us, the estimate right at the moment is approximately $90,000. And the Homeowners Association over the years has planned for this type of problem. We do have adequate money in our reserve account. We don't anticipate any other future problems of any significance. We will still have probably $20,000 to $25,000 in our reserve account. So we can afford that. In fact, we are about to send out the scope of work and ask for proposals. I have a list of about six contractors, paving contractors, that I am working on a cover letter right now to send out and ask for a bid from each of these companies to see what exactly it's going to cost us. So basically, we spend $4,000 to $5,000 every 3 years, and those streets have now been there for almost 30 years. Yeah, almost 30 years, about 28 years. So they've held up very well. A lot of the damage to the streets is a result of the construction that went on. But we have 49 lots, units in Marbrissa, and of those 49, all but four have homes built. So there will not be that additional heavy traffic going over our streets in the future. So I expect they will last certainly another 28 to 30 years without any problems.
So do you happen to know how much per person, how much you're paying for the streets per person? So every month, you know, I know there's a homeowners association dues every month. What's it costing people on a monthly basis to keep your streets in order?
Our dues run approximately $100 a month.
And that's mostly for streets?
Yes, most of it right. goes towards the streets. We have other items. Mm-hmm. We have a total of, I can tell you, in our reserve study, we have approximately 18 items on the list that we reserve for.
But a good chunk of it is streets.
A good chunk, absolutely. Mm-hmm. No question about it.
That's helpful, just to kind of focus on a small project and see how that might relate out. Sounds like as a city we maybe be able to get better bang for our buck because we maybe it's the more to do, so we get a better deal.
Yeah, well, I there's no doubt in my mind, if you want my opinion, that we, as Mr. Keene mentioned, we need to go for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I really think so, because I can appreciate the fact that if you try to pick and choose different areas, you're going to get a lot of static from the residents. And I think if we
yes.
explain to them that we're going to do all of the streets, that's what this bond issue is for, and then we will sell the bonds bit by bit and get the work done step by step. As long as they see it starting, once it gets started, I think they'll all be happy.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Actually, if I can comment mm-hmm. on what Mr. Nichols was just saying in the conversation you were just having back and forth, if my numbers are right, to maintain from a new street and basically rebuilding the street after 30 years, along with the continual maintenance, it ends up being about $4 a square foot. So to completely rebuild the streets, we're at $10 a square foot. So, I mean, that is making sense. Because if our streets were in the maintained condition, I think Mr. Ray was saying it would be somewhere about $4 to $5 a square foot. So if I heard that correctly, or maybe that was a conversation we've had previously, but it's kind of in keeping in line with what we're talking about.
I always like to add down and across, so that gives us a separate way of looking at it. Okay. Any other comments or questions up here? Any? Yes, Mr. Boucher.
Yes, Mayor. The first two speakers brought up a very good point. Is my street going to be fixed? And that would be tested in the survey. How likely would you vote for one of the higher-end taxes at the bottom, scenario three, if we knew your streets were going to be repaired? And then it would say, well, they'd say, no, it didn't matter. If my street were going to be repaired, I wouldn't vote for it anyway. So then you go down the list and test different tax rates. And that's what the poll will do for you. The other thing is the last speaker that spoke, we used 25 years, but there's nothing that say we couldn't issue bonds for 15 years or 20 years or 10 years. What would be the problem? Is it would be higher, exactly, it'd be a higher number. But there's certainly, and I have done that, where you issue bonds for less than 25 years, but a lot of it would depend on your growth and assessed value down the road, where you could start maybe shortening the maturities instead of 25 years, mm-hmm. going to 20 years or 22 years. I've done that. Potentially you could, if you go issue under the government code, you could issue up to 40 years. I'm not proposing that. But I think people use streets, and it's a depleting asset because we all drive on them. And if you can get new streets and then maintain them with your current budget, that would seem to make fiscal sense.
Thank you. Thanks.
So that's the issue that I have, and I think John brought it up as our speaker. We're only paying to rebuild them but not to maintain once we've rebuilt them. So we have to come back, and I think we have to find that balance. And it might be a number of issues that we do, is vacation, minimizing street widths, whatever it takes to get to that balance where, if we do go through toward this bond measure, if the residents do, that the city does have the funds to maintain it indefinitely.
Yeah, that's important, mm-hmm. very important.
So, yes, go for the whole – I mean, we're not making a decision tonight, right. but the gist of what we're hearing is look at what it's going to look like to do all of the streets. Consider that and look at what we need to do to be able to afford to maintain those streets as we go along. Right. So.
And I think one of the speakers also mentioned, a game plan of how to do this. I mean, this was a very good broad-brush approach, and I guess the question becomes – multi-headed question here is if we do move forward, which I have a sense there will be some next steps that'll happen, what are those next steps? And A, does staff have the time? And B, do we have the resources to get those steps in a particular time frame that we want to move forward with?
Good idea.
Somewhat quicker than 6 years.
Madam Mayor, if I
yes.
could.
Mm-hmm.
The concept that at least staff had looked at in terms of progression was true. This is a broad-based discussion. I would suggest that it won't be ready for the 16th. But at the meeting in January, we have a discussion regarding those next steps and some recommendations regarding where we should be moving. I think that we've heard a lot of discussion by the council, and we've had some very good questions that have been, you know, posed by the audience as well. And so I'm thinking that what we're going to need to do is begin kind of using the funnel approach. And so it would be agendizing this for the meeting in January the 21st, I believe it is, to begin working out some strategy options for the council. And that you could take specific direction on at that and begin making some decisions.
So it looks like we're at the stage now where we're going to be talking about the direction that we might want to give you. And I when is the next meeting in January? Have we decided on that date?
Yeah, it. Okay. I think it's the. It's right after Martin Luther King's birthday, so I think that's the 21st of January.
Tuesday the 21st. Right. So it's that's the
good
third
for memory.
The third Monday in
January.
January. Okay. Or is it going to be on a Tuesday?
It's
Monday
a Tuesday.
Is Martin. Okay. Jack, you had another comment.
Question, and nobody said anything about it. It kind of ties into this thing. It's a charter city.
Well, the...
I was going to.
If I could, Madam Mayor, the discussion regarding the committee report to the council will be coming forward on the 16th, next Monday. And then it'll be up to the council as to what they determine they're going to do.
And I want to. I'm going to comment on that in just a little bit later. I'll comment on that. And I'm thinking right now, I'd like to just hear from the council as to whether there's any other thing in the direction that we've given to do the next funnel approach on the meeting on Tuesday, the 21st of January. I took some notes, and so I hope you guys will add if there's anything else you think we need to address and also edit. Make sure that we've planned for maintenance so that we look at the other options that have been raised, that we perhaps abandon streets and maybe look at, I don't know if we're at the stage where we'd look at how many we might be able to abandon or where. I don't know if we're at that stage yet, but... Okay. If you think maybe just a general rule, if we abandoned a few streets or maybe a few that it would work, what would that bring us? Looking at, we talked about medians and curb gutters and sidewalk and giving part of the street back. How much of the streets actually would that, how many places would that actually be an option? What would that mean to us? Let's see. Mr. Nichols was curious, and I think it's good to remind ourselves of how the League of Cities, the poll that they published, take a look at that again, and just as part of the package. The survey we've talked quite a lot about, and I thought all of that was, those were all good suggestions. The cost of that truck, if we were to look at getting that truck, what would the cost be? So we can weigh that up. And that's all I had was, the only other thing is I'm thinking at our next meeting, since we really want the public to come and speak, and we've had some great input tonight, but at the end of the day, it's going to be the community that decides will we or will we not do this. And I would much rather have them come and weigh in now rather than when we get wait till we get to the ballot or wait till we get so far along. So this is my plea to the public to come, but I want to make sure that they know that it's out there. So I'm wondering if we have another Sea Breeze publication coming out that we could put it out in, if we could do press releases. I do want to make sure that we get as much public input as possible from the community so that they don't feel it's been sprung on them as a surprise, but they really know that we want to hear from them before we make all our decisions. Okay.
You know, I don't know about the Sea Breeze article. We will continue to review ways of trying to inform the public that this is coming forward. We'll certainly post the presentations online. We are using Facebook, as you know, mm-hmm. and we announced this on Facebook. And we have also, we'll continue to issue press releases.
And great. Maybe what about possibly even an insert with the utility bill?
Gayla, it's probably not possible. And the only reason I say that is if we're going on the 21st, mm-hmm. we're already in the process of having to work that billing up. So
we need more time.
Right.
But consider that maybe for the next time. I know there's a certain schedule.
We need about a two-month, okay. and I'm sure that this will keep coming back. There
right.
will be other options. But as Gayla just noted, we can do that if we know we're having a meeting 2 months out, then we can get it out.
Or as we continue this process, come up on a deadline of when you have to know by, maybe consider whether we should be including it. Any other suggestions of things to add?
I was going to say, which that kind of piggybacks right onto what I was going to say with regards to if we do at the next presentation start to talk about whether it's assessment district, general obligation bonds, or what, we realize something's going to happen at an election, and mm-hmm. kind of starting from an election standpoint and moving backwards so that we know kind of highlights of when we need to make decisions, which then gives staff an understanding of when they need to have items prepared for us and how much resources need to go into those timings to whether maybe we're too late for this next election already. I don't think we are, but we may know that based upon the input that you provide us at the next meeting.
You raised that before next steps, and I think that's really relevant. Yeah. Bill.
One of the other things, I think, number one, you may be able to give me an opinion, Greg. I don't know. I have been thinking that streets such as Saratoga and or Brighton, those streets that are so wide that run east and west, if you have driven those streets at all, you'll recall that as you go westbound on any of those streets, Atlantic City, Brighton, Saratoga, what have you, a beautiful ocean view.
View
as
corridor.
You drive down those. If we're talking about narrowing down the streets, are we going to add a significant expense or maybe add no expense if we put a center island on those streets that are so wide, all with native drought-resistant type plants that would not be a significant maintenance problem for the city? And in addition to that, might even be able to talk to the residents that live along those streets and ask for their support in maintaining the center island. There are a couple of streets like that. I believe I still have some photographs that I took in Santa Barbara. There is a street that they did that on. It was a very wide street, and when they repaved and redid the street, they put a center island in it. So you have parking on both sides of the street. You also have a driving lane. I'm not sure, but they might not even have a bicycle lane, and they have a center island. So that would certainly reduce the amount of maintenance for the pavement portion of it. So I think that's something we ought to look at for those streets. Might be something very attractive that we could consider.
I agree, and I think you mentioned the view shed. What we do also want to be very careful about is whatever we do, making sure that we don't suggest that people plant a lot of tall trees in the center median or if we gift back some of the right of way or some of the land. The last thing we want to do is start blocking those views, because it's the width of the street that provides the view.
This would not block anybody's views.
No.
In fact, it would give people walking and hiking down the street to walk down through that middle island. And
yeah, so long as we don't put tall trees in it, it won't block the view.
Correct.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't put tall trees in it. No.
So maybe at some point along the way, then we need to weigh up the benefits and benefit analysis of those things.
Yeah, well, as we get more detailed, we'll be able to begin to frame that up as we take a look at the narrowing street strategy and what that will actually involve.
Any other comments on that?
Just identifying the data that we need to really come up with the costs that are that we're dealing with. And data meaning, well, the truck routes, the roads that take the trucks are going to have the stronger structural sections, whereas the residential roads we can make do with something less, the widths if we can get those. And then once we know what we have and where we want to go, then we can get the costs that we need to maintain and rebuild and what we might need to vacate to make all this balance. If any of that made any sense
at all.
There's a lot of data there's a lot of work that has to be done.
I'm sitting here thinking we have got such a good council to work on this because we've got two engineers. We've got someone who works with contracts in a school district all the time. We've got someone who manages the streets in his own development, and you've got a business person and a right-of-way agent. What better mix could you have for getting this job done?
Get this done.
Great. Let's get it done.
And fabulous staff.
And, well, that goes without saying. We say that often. So I did want to raise a couple of things that didn't come up. One was that we've been asked before, well, why don't you just put another 0.5% on the sales tax? And I think most of us in here have got that perspective now. The 0.5% on the sales tax nets us $500,000. That's two blocks. It just doesn't do it for us. The other thing that people say is, yeah, but you've got this hotel and it's going to bring you all this money. In fact, we've got two hotels coming in. And the two hotels will generate about $1 million a year. That does about five blocks. So those are the things that we're going to need perhaps to do that ongoing maintenance. They're not going to solve our streets problem. And I wanted to address those. They'll help us with keeping our streets going. Yeah. And finally, I wanted to address the charter thing. You know, one of the reasons that the council, at least three of us on the council, and I know one of us who is running, one of the reasons we really wanted to have the charter is because it allowed us to make our own rules of how we use our local funds when we're doing local projects. And so we had envisioned that by passing the charter, we might be in a position to reduce some of our costs by about 15% to 20%, which when we're talking about this magnitude, that's huge for a little town that has a general fund of $7 million a year. So the difficulty for us on that now, and there's still very many good reasons to have a charter, and we're still going to consider that, I know, at our next meeting. The difficulty is that the state has now come in and said that any city that does not use prevailing wage won't get any state money. And that would be a real problem for us. So the political scene is such now that although having a charter city and looking to this perhaps for the future is something that we want to keep in mind, and this battle is not over yet, we are not going to be able to take advantage of that. And I think that anybody in town who stops and really thinks about that would sure wish we could. So that was that. But I did want, on that line also, and the reason I waited till the end here is in closing, there was a flyer that came out today, and I don't have mine here.
The lunch? Oh, no.
Well, there is a lunch.
Could I mention that also?
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
The Grover Beach Arroyo Grande Chamber of Commerce luncheon is Wednesday at 12 o'clock noon up at the South County Regional Center. And there is going to be a forum on Charter City. Both communities, Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, are going to put, or hopefully, Arroyo Grande has already decided they're going to put that matter on the ballot in November. So they will have a forum. There will be three members on the forum itself. Mr. Lieberman, who has been working on this issue for some time on behalf of Grover Beach. Judith Bean, who is the head of the chamber and the committee chairman for the Arroyo Grande committee that's worked on it, and a gentleman from Bakersfield, Russell Johnson, who is the representative from the Associated Builders Company or Corporation?
Coalition or something with a C.
ABC. Anyway, he strongly supports charter cities, and his organization strongly supports charter cities. So he will be here and be a member of that panel at the forum. So it's open to anyone that wants to attend that luncheon. And if you have an interest in it, I would certainly encourage you to attend it. It starts at 12 noon Wednesday at the South County Regional Center.
And call first thing tomorrow morning, because I think today was the last day to register, but I'm sure they'll let you in.
I
can't speak for them, but
I don't know what they've got so far. So
They'll do their best, I know. So today in the mail, all of us who live in Grover Beach received a flyer, which is not too far different from the ones that were received last year before the election. There's not really much truth in anything that's said in it. But one of the claims that's made is that decisions are being made behind closed doors. And that's one of the reasons why I'm saying to the public, come out. We don't want to make decisions without you. And I wondered if the city attorney would speak to the flyer that came out stating that decisions about the charter are being made behind closed doors.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. This is the piece of, propaganda that hit the mailboxes recently. And it speaks to two cities, and I can only speak to Grover Beach, and obviously. It states that secret meetings potentially breaking the law. We've been through this several times in public and have said it a number of times. The committee is a private committee. It is not subject to the Brown Act. As far as I know, the meetings are not secret. Anybody who wishes to come and participate in the meetings can do that. And again, the council will have a report from the private committee, I think, at the next council meeting.
So there's a citizens committee that we did not appoint that has been out there looking at this issue, is going to come back at our next meeting on Monday the 16th. And we hope that they've got some good ideas for us, and we hope that the rest of the public will show up and give us those ideas also. And unless there's any other comment, I'm going to adjourn this meeting. And thank you so much, everyone, for weighing in tonight. It is 8:52.